What you know about that? What you know about that? Hey, don't you know I got shit?
Starting off the day with a little bit of T.I. because I've got Brian Kennedy from WTVQ coming on with me here in about, I'd say about 15 minutes. We're going to have him on to talk about UK football. We're going to be talking about high school football, NBA playoffs, and everything else under the sports sun. And you're listening to Angelo Carriero here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5 FM. Already previewed pretty much what we've got coming up, so let's get right into it. Kentucky finalized their football schedule, and I needed to take about a week to look over it and kind of see where I felt on how Kentucky is going to finish this year. SEC only conference slate. They've got 10 games, and let's get right into it. And this is going to be an extended version of the way I see it. Let's get down to it. Kentucky football begins the year on November 26th against Auburn. Now, before I get into this game and the other ones, I just want you to let you know that I have a couple different categories that I put games in. Facing Alabama is not the same as facing Vanderbilt. Okay, I think we can all agree on that. So I don't categorize these games as all a lump sum or even an individual contest. Kind of loop them into groups. I have four wins that I think Kentucky is absolutely, no bones about it, locked in to win this upcoming season. I have two toss-ups. I have two probable losses and two guaranteed losses. So for me, I think the floor of this University of Kentucky football team is four wins. I think the ceiling, I mean, if everything goes absolutely perfect for the Kentucky football Wildcats this year, I think they could win eight. I really do. I think that's where the ceiling of this team is. Where do I fall on it? Now we're going to get into the schedule. So the Auburn Tigers last year finished 9-4. They had a rough bowl loss. They lost to Minnesota. Minnesota, one of their crowning years, kind of like what Kentucky did 2 years ago with that Penn State win. Minnesota kind of got theirs over Auburn. The way that I kind of described Auburn was that they beat the teams they should beat, and they lose to all the great teams. They were in that weird purgatory of you're not an elite SEC team, but you're in that next rung. You're a really good one. You are the representative of the SEC the way that you should be. Now, a lot of Kentucky fans have a lot of belief in this game. I don't feel necessarily the same way about it, and there are a couple of reasons why. Number one, I hate to say it, they're Auburn. They got Gus Malzahn, made a national championship game. Like I said, they played some close games last year. Now, they did almost lose to Oregon, but they did win that game. They actually played LSU at LSU in one of the single greatest seasons of any college football team in history, played them to a 23-20 loss. They only lost by 7 to Georgia. They beat Alabama. They were a very, very good football team last year. Now, they are losing some pieces. You know, Derek Brown is the one you think of first and foremost, but they do bring back Bo Nix, who's kind of an outsider in the Heisman race. The thing that gets me worried the most is that Kentucky's, as good as Lynn Bowden was last year and as good as the team was, there were a lot of close games. The margin for points scored and points against wasn't that big of a big gap compared to Auburn, which scored 33 points last year to only giving up 19.5. In the last 4 years, starting in 2016, they give up 17.1 points per game, 18.5, 19.2, 19.5. And with Terry Wilson coming off of that injury, I don't know if he'll necessarily be tuned up to that point. But your argument, they've had all of these months to get ready. They put in their playbook. They're practicing. But going to Jordan-Hare at the beginning of fall to face this Auburn team, I just don't see it. I have them at a loss to start off at Auburn. Now let's go to the pretty much Mississippi North, where back-to-back weeks, Kentucky on the 3rd and the 10th get Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Okay, both teams have new head coaches, Lane Kiffin for Ole Miss and Mike Leach for Mississippi State. When you have that type of turnover and you don't have a team's roster, especially with a team that went 4-8 in Ole Miss and 6-7 in Mississippi State last year, I don't see it. I don't see where you can convince yourself that a Kentucky team that's returning a ton of talent, especially on the offensive line, coming to Lexington both weeks. I personally don't see Ole Miss winning, and I don't see Mississippi State winning. I've got Kentucky starting off the year 2-1, defeating Ole Miss and defeating Mississippi State. Now, I will say one thing that kind of alarms me, I guess, is that this isn't a Dan Mullen Mississippi State team. They had, I believe his name was Tom Moorhead, whoever, he's gone, the head coach of Mississippi State. Kind of, when he came from Penn State, he brought in more of a four wide receiver spread, which means I don't think that the talent for Mike Leach, I think it's a little more caught up to what he wants to do. And that doesn't even include that they got KJ Costello to transfer over, Kylan Hill, one of the best returning running backs in the SEC. He's coming in. But overall, I just think with the new coach, Kentucky secondary with Brandon Echols and Cedric Dort Jr. and getting Robinson back and Corker back there, let's be real. Kentucky's winning. So two of my for sure wins are actually Ole Miss and Mississippi State. I consider Auburn a probable loss just due to the recruiting, go to Jordan Hare. They got a great coach in Gus Malzahn. I think it's just too many factors going against. So I have one of my probable losses is Auburn, and two of my guarantee wins are Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Let's go to a toss-up game, and that's Tennessee. And we're going to Neyland on the 17th of October to face Tennessee. Tennessee, you know, I really wanted to say they were worse than maybe I thought they were, but they were 8-5 last year. They have nine starters returning on offense, eight returning on defense. Jeremy Pruitt's really turned around that program. I think anytime you get an Alabama disciple in there, even though he wasn't their first, second, or 11th choice, I think he was kind of the guy to do that job, and it seems like that's going to pan out for the Volunteers. Now, they are without their two best wide receivers, as Callaway and Jennings graduated, but they do bring back, like I said, a lot of starting talent, a lot of talented players. I do have this game as a toss-up. I think this would go either way. At Tennessee, I can see Kentucky winning the game. I could just as easily see what happened last year at Kroger Field, where you lose on a just inches away from the goal line. Lynn Bowden just couldn't quite sneak in there, and Tennessee walks away with another just punch in the gut victory. I mean, prove it to me. I think that this game is as close as could be, but I am taking Tennessee at Tennessee to win that game. One of my guaranteed losses, I only have two, and I don't think one of them's really hard to figure out when we get there. But I do have Kentucky losing to Georgia. I don't think that Georgia necessarily has all of the star power that we've come to expect over the last couple of years, but those guys usually emerge in season with the Bulldogs. Kirby Smart has, and I was talking to Brad Taylor of The Bottom Line during one of the breaks. I think that Georgia is probably the third best program in the nation. I would probably go Clemson, Alabama, Georgia at this point. And when you have a program like that, where the wheel in the sky keeps on turning, and it keeps on turning in favor of Georgia, I have that as a guaranteed loss. So we're looking at 2-3 with a trip to Missouri, who also just got a new head coach, whose program he inherited to me is not very good. Four returning starters on offense, seven on defense. Their scoring total dipped dramatically last year. Defense played okay, only 19.4 points per game given up. But they were 3-5 in the conference. They were 5-2 at home, which is good to see. I don't care personally. Eli Brinkwitz, I don't see this. I don't see Missouri having a chance here. I see Kentucky going to Columbia and escaping with that victory. So at the bye week, which is November 7th, at the bye week, I have Kentucky sitting at 3-3. And this is Angelo Carriero. You're listening to ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM. You can stream us live all around the world at WLXG.com. And don't forget, here in just minutes, I'm going to have Brian Kennedy on to talk about my predictions for the Kentucky football schedule. We're going to talk about high school football, NBA playoffs, all of that. So don't go anywhere and stay tuned. But before I have Brian Kennedy on. I do have to finish this schedule. Coming out of the bye week, home game versus Vanderbilt, what do you all think? It's a guaranteed win. That is the fourth sure win that I have on Kentucky's schedule. So that means I think Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Missouri, and Vanderbilt are absolute wins. And the only one that even kind of worries me is Mississippi State with Mike Leach. But, you know, I think Mike Leach sometimes, I think his legend is almost a little more than what he's worth at times, what he did at Washington State. But, you know, neither here nor there. Those are my four guaranteed wins. So I have Kentucky at 4-3. And this is where the schedule stops being fun. This is where I have my biggest qualms with high Kentucky prediction records. November 21st at Alabama and Tuscaloosa, that is my second guaranteed loss, is to the University of Alabama. There's no really explanation I need to say. If you think we're beating Alabama, I want to watch the game with you that day because I love facing difficult teams. I love facing Alabama. Love facing LSU. I love facing teams as a Kentucky football fan where you have a chance to do something special and have an upset of that magnitude, like LSU ranked number one, like Louisville ranked number nine back in 07. You have these special moments. I don't think that one's being made this year. I think Alabama is going to absolutely take that game. And then 7 days later, traveling, coming back to Lexington, then traveling to Gainesville to the Swamp. Now, we'll see about what the rules are with fans at that point, how rocking of a stadium that's going to be. I don't expect it to be anywhere close to even 50% capacity, so maybe the home field advantage won't be there, but having to travel after getting beat up by Alabama and then going to Florida to face Florida, I have that as a probable loss, and I do have that as a loss on the schedule prediction. And then to wrap it up, December 5th, final game of the year, home against South Carolina. This is my second toss-up game, but guys, after going from Alabama to Florida and then coming home for South Carolina, I don't see how they can escape Alabama and Florida without being just bruised and battered. I don't see it. I just don't see how the physical peak and the condition of the Wildcats are going to be there by that time. I don't think South Carolina is very good, but at the same time, Will Muschamp has done a good job while he's been at South Carolina, and coming to Lexington, just depending, I'm going to look at South Carolina's schedule real quick before we go on this break. And for the year, I just don't think that anybody has a harder two-game stretch at the end of the season in the nation than going to Alabama and then turn around and going to Florida. So I think as an adverse effect to that, I have South Carolina loss. So my prediction for the Kentucky Wildcats, in just looking at the schedule, just looking at the coaches gone, just looking at some stats, where the bye week's placed and when Kentucky travels, I just have them at 4-6. Now, I think, like I said, the ceiling for this team, I have at 8 wins. I think that's the absolute upper echelon ceiling. My realistic record, if you want to do glass, if you want to be liberal and say like, oh, I think that this could happen without being a pipe dream, I do think Kentucky can go 6-4 easily. I think you can flip that Tennessee and the South Carolina win, but then maybe you have to flip Mississippi State, which puts the team at about 5-5, which all of these numbers are very close to the Vegas betting odds, which, you know, Kentucky does a good job of kind of beating those over-unders here the last couple of years, especially when Kentucky went 10-3 with a victory over Penn State in the Citrus Bowl. But yeah, I have the team at 4-6, and I want to know what Brian Kennedy's opinion on that. He covers sports for WTVQ ABC 36, and right after the break, don't go anywhere. Brian Kennedy will be on to tell me what he thinks about the schedule, what he thinks about the high school football season, and if that's going to get played, and then talking a little NBA playoffs. It's Angelo Carriero here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM.
Bring them out, bring them out, bring them out, bring them out. It's hard to yell when the bat rails in your mouth.
Come on.
Bring them out, bring them out.
Hey.
Bring them out, bring them out.
Yeah.
Bring them out, bring them out.
Hey.
Bring them out, bring them out.
Yeah, bring them out indeed. Angelo Carriero here with you on ESPN Sports Radio 1300. 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. Brian Kennedy here joining me in just a second. But first, I want to start off with a little bit of news that happened over the week. I don't want to have, you know, too much news. I want to go straight to Brian. But two things that I thought were of note. Brandon Phillips, former Cincinnati second baseman, believe he was an all-star. He played for the Lexington Legends during the week, which I think is so cool because of, you know, for a guy, he just had such a personality and such a way that he played the game. And not only that, he was really good, that a lot of people around here and Cincinnati fans in general, he kind of became the, I would argue that maybe he was as great as Joey Votto is, that Brandon Phillips was every Reds fan's favorite player during the time he was there. So to come to Lexington and kind of get to stay in that regional appreciation of like who Brandon Phillips is, I think that was really cool to see. The University of Kentucky got their first basketball commitment for 2021 in Nolan Hickman. Nolan Hickman is a four-star point guard that a lot of people were kind of underwhelmed with, especially after losing out on two top five recruits in 7 days when Paolo, you know, committed to Duke and the other kid committed to Tennessee. We don't have to worry about them anymore. But apparently there's a lot of people that kind of are on the beat of the scene that think that he is a really, really good prospect. And he's someone that could come in and kind of, maybe kind of reminds me of like Shea, like where he comes in, like you're not going to hear about him much now, but when he gets in here and he starts to work, then you've got something cooking. So it'll be really interesting to see about Hickman, and we'll talk more about him next week. And today would have been Kobe Bryant's birthday. And obviously Kobe Bryant died of a horrific helicopter crash back in January, left a lot of people, including, I was never a huge Kobe guy growing up because I got on kind of the LeBron side of it, and it was just a really toxic argument a lot of people had. But I didn't expect to feel the way that I felt when Kobe passed away. It was just so shocking, and it reverberated with people for months, and including that is my resident Lakers friend and going to be a friend of the program, an overall great dude in, well, I guess I wouldn't say an even better sportscaster. I don't know if that's the appropriate way to say it, but I got Brian Kennedy on the line with me. And Brian, I figured I wanted to give you the floor for a second, if you would like, and talk a little bit about your feelings about Kobe now that today's would have been his 42nd birthday.
Yeah, man. Well, first, thanks for having me on. But yeah, so I'm a big Lakers fan, but an even bigger Kobe fan, because Kobe is why I became a Lakers fan. You know, I feel like in sports, you know, especially being younger, you know, when you're young, like there's always an athlete that you want to kind of grasp onto and kind of, I don't want to say idol, but kind of be that guy that you love. And Kobe was that for me. Early high school, you know, those early 2000s when the Lakers and, you know, Shaq and Kobe, that's when I really got all in. And then when I was in college and when he made his second run and won two in a row, that's when I really kind of, I was all about Kobe. And since then, man, I loved him. Actually, so my first journalism job was in Mississippi, was in Gulfport, Mississippi. And his last season, he played against the Pelicans. And New Orleans was about an hour away from where I was. And that was the greatest night of my life. I got to see Kobe in his final season. And even better, it was such a coincidence. I bought tickets. They seemed close. Well, they ended up being like literally on the front row right behind the Lakers bench.
Oh,
so I was like, this is like the greatest thing ever. And I'll never forget that. I was like, man, because I was like, I mean, he plays in L.A. At the time, I just lived in Kentucky. The closest really professional to here is the Pacers, but that's just so far out of the way. I was like, I'm never going to get to see him play. And then, you know, the way things work out, I got to see him play. And that was the greatest night of my life. And, you know, I remember when Kobe died, which we're tweeting back and forth, man, that was so surreal. Like, I still look back and can't believe that happened, because it was so sudden for anyone. And so now looking back, you know, I've bought so much more Lakers gear than I've ever had in my entire life, because I'm like, all right, like a model in, because like I said, I was a big Kobe guy, Lakers as well. But since he left, you know, they honestly weren't that good. And, you know, but now that, you know, everything has happened and LeBron is back, you know, I'm all in. It's such a sad day, but it's a happy day to celebrate what he did. And I'm celebrating last night after the Lakers got a win, because AD and LeBron did what they were supposed to do. But we'll talk about the NBA in a little bit.
Yeah, we'll talk about the NBA in a little bit. I do have a big regret. I was actually in Charlotte, North Carolina on during Kobe's last season. I was on the only time I've ever been to Charlotte, I think, was that night, and Kobe was playing in Charlotte. And I wanted to go, but the person and I were with, we just didn't have the change or really the time to go. Yeah. And that's something I've always regretted, because I thought that would have been so cool. And the guy I was with was a Lakers fan. And that's what made it so ridiculous. Trust me, Brian, I don't want to hatch into it, but I was very upset about it. Speaking of things to be upset about, I don't think people listening to this show are probably as happy with my predictions for the Kentucky football schedule this year. And first, before I tell you, my answers, what answer did you get? What have you made like a prediction yet on the season? What record do you think Kentucky football is going to finish with?
I don't want to say necessarily a record, but I think if they can get 6 to 7 wins, I think it's a success. I mean, because anytime you lose Eastern Illinois, Kent State, and Eastern Michigan, and add Ole Miss, you know, things change, right?
Yeah.
So you can't have the same outlook on the season, because there are basically 3 wins thrown out the door. Right, so
right.
Now you replace that with, you know, Ole Miss, Bama, then also you play Georgia. So there's some tough games in there, but also the South Carolina game. That's a game you should win. Vandy, you should win that. Missouri, you should win that. Mississippi State, you should hopefully win that. Ole Miss. So there's the game that there's in college football. I feel like your record is decided on 1, winning the games you're supposed to win, and 2, trying to win the games that. Or toss up. So, like, you know, the Tennessee game. I mean, Kentucky's had a better roster than Tennessee for the past 2 years, but somehow Tennessee keeps winning. So that's a game you have to win. So, I mean, I think if you win less than 6 games, I don't want to say disappointment, because this season is so 2020. It's the only way you can explain it. I don't want to say it's a disappointment, but this team is the deepest team you've had in years. I mean, years.
In the right spots, in some of the right spots,
right.
There's a little part of me that worries about this team, especially when it comes to the passing game.
Yeah, in general. And that was good.
And that's why my record. I actually agree with you on the toss up. I had Kentucky with 4 absolute for sure wins, 2 toss ups, 2 probable losses, 2 guaranteed losses. So I had the for sure wins as Ole Miss and Mississippi State. You got them home early in the season, back-to-back weeks. New head coaches. I figured that those are games that Kentucky should, at this point, win.
Absolutely.
Had at Missouri, bye week versus Vanderbilt. I have both of those games as wins on the schedule. So I have 4, and that's where I had it stop. I had Kentucky at 4-6, and that's it's not perfect, but you have to look at it. The 2 toss-up games, Tennessee, who were 8-5 last year, and they return, I think, 17 starters to the team. Jeremy Pruitt is really starting to get something cooking there. Like I said, that's a 50-50 game for me. And then I had South Carolina's 50-50. And the only reason why I had that, if we played South Carolina week 2, I would make that a guarantee win. But not only is it at the end of the season, you're telling me that Kentucky is going to go to Alabama, come back to Lexington, and 7 days later go to Florida, and then come out of that unscathed. I feel like that is a schedule loss, almost, to go those back-to-back games and then try to ramp yourself up. Both of those games, by the way, I have at Kentucky with losses, to get up after those 2 losses and come back and defeat South Carolina. Now, Stoops has done a lot better job at winning those games at the end of the year, which before in his early tenure at Kentucky, he was terrible at closing out seasons. Now he's actually done a pretty good job. I just kind of have that as a schedule loss, but it's a toss-up. So those are the 2 games where I think you could go 6-4. And then if you want to get really, really optimistic and hopeful, I think you could convince yourself into flipping the Auburn and Florida game. But that's the way that I kind of see the schedule breaking down. And a lot of that is a little bit of uncertainty about Terry Wilson. What have you heard about Terry Wilson's like condition of his knee, and is he really, truly ready to go for the start of the season?
So with the way things are, usually by now we've been allowed into practice at least once, but obviously they're not going to do that at all this year, I'd imagine. So usually we would have at least seen him once. So all we have to go on are what the coaches say. And while I love UK coaching staff, hey, he's ready to go, he's good to go, he's 100%, right? That's what they're supposed to say.
Of course.
At least until the first game happens, you're like, oh, he's missing a step. Or he could be ready to go, which I hope he is, because I've interviewed Terry multiple times, did a 1-on-1 with him before the Citrus Bowl. Love him. Great guy. Even then, you know, even his first season, people don't know, he hurt his knee his first season at Kentucky, that Citrus Bowl season. He was actually hurt for the vast majority of that season. So, wow. You know, I think people didn't know that. He told me that in that 1-on-1, and even then it didn't get as much buzz as I thought it would be. But, you know, looking at this season, I think you're kind of talking about it. He's the key. Is he back to Terry before he got hurt? And two, I mean, these receivers basically took a year off, more or less.
Yeah.
So I mean, you look at, you know, Alan Daly, Josh Ali, all in Cleveland Thomas, who caught a touchdown pass last year. A lot of these guys, like, we don't really know what we have in them as sophomores and juniors, because basically, while UK was successful last year, despite what happened, these receivers didn't get a lot of passes last year. So my biggest question mark comes to the receiving core is that, you know, when things get going, are they going to be able to answer the bell? And I think they will, because the talent is there. But as we know in college football, you can have all the talent in the world, but when Saturday rolls around, what happens? You know, are you dropping passes? Are you not making plays? You know, now, you know, you lose a guy, Lynn Bowden Jr., who was the go-to guy. Granted, he played quarterback, but remember, once upon a time, he was a receiver. So he was Terry's guy, right?
Right.
So now he's gone. So now you really, we don't know what to expect from some of these guys at all. Like I said, Cleveland Thomas caught a touchdown pass from Lynn last year. You know, Josh Ali had that huge catch in the Virginia Tech game. But so we know they're there, but we just don't know what they can do with that consistent game in, game out, 3rd and 8 in the red zone. Are you going to catch the ball? Are you going to make the play? We don't know. So that's a question mark that we have. I mean, UK's offensive line, we already know they're not just one of the best in the SEC. They're one of the best in the nation. So that's not a worry. But so the question is, you know, what's the receiving corps going to do? And it's a big question mark right now. I have faith in them, but I mean, you know, we'll see. And then tight end, Justin Rigg, Keaton Upshaw, two guys we want to hear from as well. I mean, we'll see. I'm excited for the season, even though it's going to be kind of different. First, I hope they play. And two, you know, when it gets going, I mean, like I said, I think this is one of the better teams in a while. So, I mean, I'm excited to see what they can do.
Brian Kennedy joining me, Angelo Carriero, here on ESPN Sports Radio 1392.5 FN. Brian, is there any update on Joey Gatewood's status? Because last I checked, which maybe something changed, has he been cleared to play this season?
He has not been cleared. So Coach Stoops had his beginning of the year press conference on Monday. Usually we're all packed into that little recruiting room, but
right.
I was sitting on the couch in my shorts and bare feet in my laptop listening to Stoops. So we're whirlwind. But he said one of the updates he gave on Joey was, you know, we've submitted his paperwork and we haven't heard back. So, I mean, that's NCAA. You just never know when you're going to hear back. Or
does the NCAA hate Kentucky because, what, JT Daniels got cleared immediately this year going to Georgia. Justin Fields got cleared immediately going to Ohio State last year. But Xavier Peters, it took, like, what, to like the after the first game to get cleared last year? And then Joey Gatewood, we're about a month away from the start of football here,
yeah.
And he's still not clear. What's – I mean, you tell me. Does NCAA have it out for Kentucky or what?
Here's what's going to happen. If he doesn't get cleared and if Olivier Starr doesn't get cleared, something's going to burn. I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to – because it feels like – I mean, the problem with the NCAA is there's never been any rhyme or reason as to why they clear people, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you look closer, you're like, well, JT Daniels, well, are they clearing all these top quarterbacks from top programs? Is that what's happening? Because that's what it looks like.
Yep.
So, I mean, you don't want to play that narrative, but we don't have anything else to go on. I mean, what are you going to do?
So
if they don't clear Joey, what's the first question? You're going to say, why? Well, you cleared all these other guys. What's the difference? And I think that's the problem is they don't have any clear-cut rhyme or reason as to why they clear or don't clear players. So, I mean, you just don't know. You know, last year they did clear Xavier Peters, but that experiment didn't work out at all. You know, he's not even at Kentucky anymore.
Right.
So, you know, you could have that as an example of how, you know, they have cleared someone, but he wasn't exactly an impact player. Quarterback is obviously the most impact player on your team. So I don't know. I hope he gets cleared because, you know, we all hope Terry is healthy, but we all have seen what happened if you don't have a deep set of quarterbacks behind your starter. So, and I feel like Joey could be the future of the program, but, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I hope they clear him, and I hope the NCAA doesn't have a vendetta against Kentucky, but history doesn't say that.
Speaking of health, Devontae Robinson, did Coach Stoops give an update on his bounce back from his injury last year?
He didn't, but I did a story with Devontae during the whole quarantine, and he says he's pretty much ready to go. So from what I remember, he said, obviously, with the whole quarantine stuff, they weren't allowed into the facility, so it's delayed it a little bit, but he told me, he's like, you know, by the time we kick off, I'll be ready to go. So, you know, last year with the defense, it was basically bare bones. It was, we have a lot of talent, but we don't have experience. Devontae was the one guy who had started any time on that defense, and then you lost him, so you were basically had a clean slate for, you know, that season. Going into this season, you know, all those young guys have experience, but Devontae is the one who's going to come back after a year off. I would assume if he's healthy, he's obviously going to be your starter. And from what, like I said, when I talked to him one-on-one, I talked to him via Zoom during the whole quarantine, probably about a couple months ago, he said he was going to be ready to go, and he was itching to get back out there. So as far as I know, from the time when they are ready to kick off, he said he'll be good to go.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't ask. Now, a lot of people are really curious about Chris Oates's situation. Obviously, went to a medical facility, I'd say almost 2 months ago. Is there any update on Chris's health and his status for upcoming season?
Yeah, so we asked Stoops about that in his press conference as well. It was quick. He said that, you know, he's moved on to a rehab facility, and the team is still behind him. Still, you know, it's one of those things where people don't know what has happened, but they don't want to process. And so it's one of those things, if we needed to know, we would know, right? So,
right.
You know, the program has been pretty tight-lipped on it. Players have been tight-lipped on it. You know, they say, out of respect for his family, they're staying tight-lipped. So it's one of those things that really, us as the media, we've respected, you know, like, all right, we obviously don't need to know, so we don't need to know. And, you know, from media, for everyone, even though we don't know what's going on, everyone's kind of wished him the best, you know. So, like I said, from what Stoops told us on Monday, he's, you know, moved on to the rehab facility, and, you know, the team is still supporting him. But other than that, still kind of in the dark on what exactly has happened. But once again, you know, we're fine with that as long as he's getting what he needs and getting better.
We haven't even began to touch on high school football or even the NBA playoffs.
Boy.
Do you mind if I keep you on for one more segment?
Not at all. My kid's sleeping. They're napping, so I'm good.
That's great. All right, Brian Kennedy, Angelo Carriero here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5 FM. Don't go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Halloween. Taliban. Yeah.
Angelo Carriero back here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. Don't forget, I am here with you every Sunday morning from 10 to 11 a.m. talking about everything under the sports sun, and I try to bring you on guests that I think that have enough information to fuel your sports knowledge and, you know, people that I think are pretty interesting. And one of those people is Brian Kennedy of WTVQ ABC 36, and he rejoins me here. And Brian, if I'm not mistaken, the way that we really got to meet and know each other was traveling through the high school circuit, wasn't it?
It was, man. I feel like that's a very close-knit crew at high school sports in the Lexington area. So, yeah, I believe that's how I met you the first time.
Yeah, even though some of you TV guys like to fraternize more than us, you know, radio knuckleheads and whatnot. So I don't worry. I see you and Keith Farmer and stuff, buddying up. I try to make my way in there. But you are one of the, and to me, one of the leading authorities of high school sports here in Lexington, and you've been really focused on trying to figure out what's going on because you do a fantastic series for WTVQ. Can you remind people of the series that you do?
Yeah, man. So it's called the 36 Blitz. So every offseason, we will preview, you know, high school football teams in our area. This year, where since we had more time, we're doing 42 teams in 21 days. We started on Friday with the Sayre Spartans, who actually their head coach is Chad Pennington. If you know anything about professional football, you know who Chad Pennington is. He's their head coach. They haven't played football in more than 40 years, a full varsity schedule in more than 40 years. So we started with them. We'll do 42 teams in 21 days leading up to the first Friday. So it's on all our evening newscasts on APC 36. Check them out. I love it. That means I've been to a lot of high schools over the past couple months, but I thoroughly enjoy doing it. My guy and I, Austin Miller, we bust it out every summer. So it's a great preview, and it's also a great way to kind of talk to these local coaches and players as far as high school football, because I played high school football, so high school football is definitely my passion.
I did too, and I absolutely feel what you're talking about there. Like I said, I think you do a fantastic job on that, so anybody listening, definitely check out Brian's series. But I have to ask you, are we going to have high school football in Lexington this year?
Man, so that's actually a double-sided question. So we could have it in Kentucky, but it may be a while before we have it in Lexington. So what's going on right now, tomorrow, so actually we'll go back. So on Thursday, the KHSAA decided to move forward with their current schedule for fall sports. So that means on August 24th, players would be allowed in all sports, including football, to start practice. It's no pads, but you can practice as a team. So you can, you know, run your pass skelly. You can, you know, do your team offense, team defense, start practicing. Because for the past, really, 2.5-3 months, all they've been doing is running and conditioning. So obviously, they're tired of that, been tired of that. So on Monday, they were allowed to start being able to practice. And then high school sports, other than football, so your volleyball, soccer, field hockey, they will be allowed to start competing on September 7th. Football will be allowed to start competing on September 11th. That was what was supposed to happen. So then on Friday, it's, as we call in the news biz, a Friday news dump. all these local board of education started saying, well, we don't know what we're going to do. So then you have to add in Andy Beshear wasn't excited at the KHSAA said to play. So what's going to happen, what happened on Friday was the Fayette County Public Schools and the Jefferson County Public Schools both said no one can practice until our Board of Education meets. So both of those boards meet on Monday. So now no one in Lexington, if you're a public school, private schools are fine. If you're a public school in the city of Lexington, you cannot practice on Monday until the board meets. Same for Jefferson County. So, But then another thing that happened on Friday was schools like Henry Clay and Tate Creek started canceling their games at the beginning of the season.
Which is not a good sign.
Which is never a good sign. So, like, Pulaski County was supposed to come to town to play Henry Clay, right?
Right.
Well, Henry Clay cancels that game. It's never a good sign. So now we're back in a limbo. And like I told you, we do the 36 splits, 42 teams, so Austin and I split it down the middle, so I've been to at least 15 to 16 football practices. And to say this is not it's taking a toll on the players and the coaches. You're playing, now you're not going to play. Now you're playing or you're not going to play. And I get it. You know, these people have to make the best decision, but, you know, you got to feel for the players as well who are kind of caught in the middle. You know, they just want to play football, but right now they're kind of caught in the middle. So as of right now, we don't know what's going to happen, but everywhere outside of Lexington and Louisville, they're, as far as I know, going to practice on Monday, but Lexington and Louisville, which, as we know, are the two, you know, Fayette and Jefferson are the largest counties in the state of Kentucky. Right now, they're putting things on hold, and they're going to make a decision. Now, I'd been told, you know, by a source that this was possibly what was going to happen. The KHSAA was going to say, go with it. Andy Beshear maybe wasn't going to stop, and it was going to possibly fall on the local school district and the superintendents to make a decision, and that's actually where we are now.
Brian Kennedy joining me on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, WLXG.com. You can stream the show here. Angelo Carriero with you, of course. Brian, I think you pretty much covered every question that I had when it comes to the availability, because it's essentially a wait and see until tomorrow. But like you said, there's a little bit of forecasting with Henry Clay and Tate's Creek going on there. Is there any other piece of information that you feel like is pertinent to this, or are you ready to move on to the NBA?
The only last part is, so there was a third option that the KHSAA was going to look at, and it was basically going to be starting the season later, late September, early October. That is a possibility now, but as everyone has said, it feels like they're kicking the can down the road and maybe giving people hope when there isn't some. So we'll see what happens tomorrow and go from there.
Speaking of hope, you didn't have much at the beginning of this week when I was following you on Twitter and talking to you when the Portland Trailblazers were able to knock off the number one seeded Los Angeles Lakers in the Western Conference. I got to say, after the last two games, from what you've seen from Anthony Davis in Game 2 and LeBron James in Game 3, you must not be feeling too bad.
No, I'm good now. I'm good now. Now, so going into that game, so I would say a week before when it was looking like it was going to be the Blazers, everyone was saying, oh, the Blazers are going to be, and the Blazers are going to beat the Lakers. And I was like, there's no shot. And then just like with anything, like that doubt starts to creep in, right? Because you hear it so much. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well maybe, I mean, like, yeah, like the Lakers have struggled with defense in the, you know, in the bubble. Lillard can shoot it from the opposite end of the court and make it. Like, that's a problem.
That's a problem.
So I'm like, well, maybe. And then you get into the game, and I'm like, ah, crap. I'm like, ah, here we go. And then, you know, at one point, Lakers are down by 16. I'm like, I'm literally laying on the floor in my room throwing stuff. I'm like, what is going on? Because they're just leaving. You can't leave Lillard. You can't leave McCollum. You can't leave those guys open because they're going to make shots, right? Like, it's going to go in. It's the NBA. So I'm worried, and then they go on a run. I'm like, okay, like they're going to win this game. And then Lillard hits a three, Melo hits a three, Trent hits a three, and it's game over. So now I'm worried. And then you got Chuck on NBA TV saying it's going to be a sweep, and I'm like, no. Because the key to the Lakers are LeBron and AD must dominate. That is what's got to happen. And also, it doesn't sound crazy because they're two of the most unguardable players in the NBA, right? So those guys putting up a triple-double or a double-double each, mm-hmm. scoring 30 more, isn't the craziest thing because, as we've seen in the last two games, you truly can't stop them, right? You can only hope to slow them down. Like, I mean, LeBron only had 10 points in Game 2, and they still won by a million. So, you know, the team can be successful without it, but for them to get where they need to be, you need LeBron and AD to be LeBron and AD.
Absolutely.
And that's what happened in the last two games. AD struggled last night in the first half. He looked terrible. But in the second half, you're like, hey, there's one of the best players in the NBA, being one of the best players in the NBA. You know, when that mid-range starts going, it's a done deal. It's over. Yeah, you're not going to stop him.
He took off the glasses and became Superman. Because the Lakers play such an old-school type of, like, physical defensive game that the only scoring really is going to come from those two. And if they're not on every single night, that's what makes it risky for later in the playoffs. But it looks good now. At least you don't have to worry as much.
I feel a lot better. I slept well last night. So, I slept very well last night.
I bet you did. Here's some of the other playoffs. There's only one other one I want to talk about before I let you go. Heat are up 3-0 on the Pacers. That series looks absolutely over. Thunder pulled out an overtime victory against the Rockets, but that series is 2-1. I still expect the Rockets to win that. And tell me if you disagree with any of this as I go through quickly. I was actually worried more that the Magic were going to beat the Bucks than the Trailblazers were going to beat the Lakers after that first game, because the Bucks just didn't look right, and Magic led the bubble in scoring, and then Milwaukee's just absolutely just slapped the you-know-what out of Orlando last two games. So let's just say I don't have any more reservations about them. And let's see. I think Boston and Philly is game over. What a disappointment, man. What an absolute disappointment there. Utah is up 2-1 on the Nuggets now, which has been kind of shocking that Denver got blown out the last two games in that series. So I think we've covered all the ones except one last one. Have you been surprised that the Mavericks have been able to keep up with the Clippers? And are you now, because I know you must hate the Clippers as a Los Angeles Lakers fan, do you think there's something going on in L.A. that they might not only are they not maybe the favorites anymore, but do you think there's even a possibility that they could really slip on the banana peel and get ousted?
I am 0% surprised because of one man. Luka Doncic is a feature of the NBA. Right, I know mm-hmm. you're an NBA guy, so I know you know how good he is mm-hmm. and how good he can be. So I feel like, so coincidentally, I feel like the two teams that are the worst matchups in the first round were the Lakers and the Clippers, because they're playing two teams that can score easily. Mm-hmm. Right, we've seen the Blazers can score at will, and the Mavs with Porzingis and obviously Doncic, but also guys like Steph Curry, Tim Hardaway, they can score at a high clip. To where that's not a problem. Where you look at the Clippers and the Lakers, the reason they've always been the top two teams is because are so similar in that they're not going to sit back and shoot threes. They're going to get physical with you, right?
Right.
Paul George is going to get physical with you. Kawhi is going to get physical with you. Those guys are going to go toe-to-toe. That's why those games are so good, right? Because they play the same games, but also you look at that game one and game two with the Clippers and the Mavericks. I mean, those are good games because you have to try to stop something that you're not good at, which are guys that can score, right?
Right.
And I think and obviously now with that series, it's all on if Luka's healthy or not. If Luka's, you know, out, the Clippers just got, I mean, the biggest gift wrap present they could ever ask for.
You're absolutely correct.
I mean, he's the key to that team, and Porzingis has been playing so incredibly well. So I'll be honestly, when he went down, I was super bummed. I was like, I don't have a dog in this fight, but as an NBA fan, I want to see a good game and a good series. But without Luka, you're not going to get it, right? It's not going to happen. But with Luka's in there, you're looking at that could go seven games. And if the Clippers have to go seven, and if they win, that takes a toll. So, it completely changes everything. Same with the Lakers and the Blazers. I mean, they're up 2-1, but the Blazers could come back and, you know, be able to make every shot in the gym and it would be 2-2. But as far as, you know, Clippers, Mavericks, that is definitely the second one. You know, I've been watching all the games, but from beginning to end, other than the Lakers series, the Clippers series is the one that I've watched from the games from beginning to end because I know I know what's about to happen. I know we're about to get a great basketball game. And that's why I really hope Luka's healthy. Kenny the Jet Smith, which I watch NBA TNT, he had a great point. He said, you know, the players had a 3 or 4 month layoff. So for Luka, this isn't technically his second season. It's almost his third season.
Yeah.
He's had another 3 or 4 months to hone in like, all right, here's what I was getting stopped on. Here's how I can get better. And that's why he's taken another step. And he's one of those guys you watch, you're like, he's so good. I don't know how he's so good. But he's so much fun to watch.
Well, they definitely
I'm very high.
Seeing Luka blossom is definitely an awesome thing for the playoffs and the future of the NBA. Brian, where can people keep up with you on Twitter, and where else do you want to redirect them?
B Kennedy TV, man. I tweet out everything from there. You can keep up with me on there. And obviously, I'm on TV every night, Monday through Friday, 6 and 11, so on ABC 36. So definitely tune in. I'll be posting those 36 blitzes throughout the week, so tune in if you can't catch them on air. Catch him on my Twitter.
Brian, I appreciate you spending your Sunday morning with me, man. It means a lot.
Always a pleasure, brother.
See you, bro. All right, real quick, I'm going to give you a little bit of SummerSlam card prediction. We have got, let me go ahead and play some music for you while we're on the way out. We have got the WWE Championship match between Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton. I think that this is where the Viper strikes to get, which I would believe is either his 14th or his 15th championship in WWE as main title. So I think Randy Orton's going to take that. The Fiend Bray Wyatt versus Braun Strowman in a false count anywhere match for the WWE Universal Championship. Of course, I'm going to go with The Fiend Bray Wyatt. And I think Asuka will beat Bayley for the SmackDown Women's Champion, but lose to Sasha Banks. And then that dynamic flips on that. Don't have any time for any more predictions, but SummerSlam's on tonight. Great sports, but keep up with the high school football situation that's going to go on tomorrow with the vote on the season. There's so much. Tweet me at AngeloMediaLex with your thoughts on the UK football season. Thank you for spending your Sunday morning with me, and I'll see you next week from 10 to 11 right here. Angelo Carriero, ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM. Bye.